Welcome everybody to Black Coffee and Theology. Well, hello everyone, we're back and we're black. Welcome back to the podcast on this blessed day for whenever you are listening to this. And hey, I love this. It's Robert, and welcome, Rose, again. It's good to be in conversation.
It's always good to be in conversation with you.
Hey, I'm excited. And yeah, I'm still getting used to it. I'm like, wow, this is like you are a co-host. I love this. I always want to reintroduce you, but you're here. You're part of this. You does this. So on the table, we are talking about a soundtrack to Black Aliveness. And I love how this season kind of evolved. I don't know that we said before the season that the theme is essentially Black Aliveness, but it has gone that way. So here we are. That is the theme of the season for those who are checking in with us. So we're talking about the soundtrack to Black Aliveness. Maybe give us a couple words, a couple thoughts on what made you think of this topic for us to talk about. Like, how does this unfold in your mind?
Well, I think there's so much in the popular imagination about what Black people bring to the world musically. And that includes, you know, what originates from us and becomes something else, emerges into genres that other people forget we started. You know, that's part of the
conversation. My Lord and my God.
You know, but there's like when we talked about Black Aliveness earlier, we talk about that invitation of Kevin Kwashi to imagine a Black world, and in that world, like, I see the diversity and the beauty of Blackness, and I see just like our unfolding possibilities, and I see the ways that we continue to reinvent ourselves and like present ourselves back to the world and say, here we are again, new genre, new format, new story. And that's so present in our music and the music that we enjoy. And I have to say the music we enjoy, because sometimes the music we enjoy isn't from Black people, but it still helps us connect with and our Black lives. So yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I was thinking, like, in preparation for this conversation, I was thinking of the beauty of calling it a soundtrack. And I'm one of those people that grew up, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, and soundtracks were everything. They used to make that movie, make or break it, actually. And so I grew up, you know, with soundtrack to Soul Food, and soundtrack to some of these epic movies. And so for me, when I'm thinking about a soundtrack for Black Aliveness, I am thinking about songs that accompany us on the journey to discovering pieces of who we are, songs that contain our rage, songs that contain like the beauty of Black joy, you know, and everything in between, right? And so all of that doesn't have to solely be by the musicians, don't have to solely be Black. And I love that you brought that up. There are people that accompany us as Black people that I don't know how they got into the culture, but I'm thinking of, what'd you say?
Can we talk about it?
You know, Paramore lives with us, you know.
Rage Against the Machine.
Live with us, you know. I'm sorry, Spice Girls used to eat. for Black people, I think of Selena, and I don't know, there was a particular time period in Chicago where you could go anywhere and you could hear Selena's music blaring, and I don't know what connected with Black folks specifically, but we love Selena down, and I was a bitty bitty bum bum, As a child, I don't know what those words were, but when I tell you, I used to be singing that from the spirit, from the depths of my soul. But yeah, songs that accompany us on the way and on the journey of our Black lives. And before we go further, I do want to acknowledge you brought up genres, and I can't have a conversation about a soundtrack to our Black aliveness without mentioning Cowboy Carter as a body of work. And give us some thoughts on that, friend. Give us some yeah, what has resonated with you in that album?
Well, I want to say that I am a new member to the Beehive. I
I
got
only
my
got here the last
card.
album, so you're good.
Yes, Renaissance was what my awakening.
Yes.
And prior to that, I was like, yeah, Beyonce is cool. I love Destiny's Child. And for me, like before I can even like begin to listen to the whole album, I will replay American Requiem several times
Let's
over.
go. Sam would love you right now. Sam would love to be in this conversation because he loves American Requiem.
Like for me, for someone who loves like nature from a distance, I'm not here for every natural experience. I just love the aesthetics. I love my house plants. But to use this metaphor, I see like Beyonce going in and just like tilling the soil and just like unearthing this, like, oh yeah, by the way, we planted the roots. I'm gonna go down to these roots and prove to you that they are ours. And it's beautiful. I know you mentioned the rage that is also part of our aliveness. And that song, she names the rage, and she names being seen one-dimensionally and needing
Yes.
to create something that demonstrated not that she's put together a country album, but that she's made a Beyonce album, and she pulled all the genres together to show you that it is a Beyonce album. So yeah, I just love that song. And one of these days I'm gonna be able to make it into the rest of the album to like fully engage with everything else. But I will be on that song for such a long time.
No, I love that. I am a new member to the Hive as well. I have not been here my whole life, but like you, I enjoy Destiny's Child. And right as she became a solo artist, I was in my fundamentalist Christian phase. So that's why I wasn't listening to Beyonce. my
No,
God.
like the way that the church has demonized Beyonce and made it seem like she was gonna drag everybody to hell, it was wild.
It was wild. And I don't know why it was specifically her in a way that other artists weren't named in that way, but there was a lot of demonization, literally demonization of Beyonce and her work. And that's a whole different conversation because I have so many thoughts on that, the white supremacy of it. Lord. But Renaissance really brought me in a way that I wasn't prepared for. Seeing her performance, like if going to the Renaissance tour, ooh, that changed my perspective on even this topic that we're talking about, the soundtrack for Black Aliveness, watching her on Renaissance, like in person, embody the music. Bring a whole stadium full of people together and caught them in these moments of time was like, for me as a musician, I was floored. And I'm like, no, she really is the GOAT. People have the conversations of, she can't really sing. No, listening to her sing full voice for almost 3 hours. Your fave could never. Your Ted, I almost named a name.
Don't even.
But Lord, let me stay focused.
Close
Yeah,
your eyes,
I
white gaze disappear.
almost disappeared too much, friend. I almost got canceled quick. But what I would say is, so then looking at Cowboy Carter, I think the anticipation from other Black folks was really cool to see. Like, yeah, I think, in the lead up to it, and then the day of just watching the reactions as different Black bodies sat with the music and different songs spoke to different people. I'll never forget that. Like, I will just never forget that. That was a special time to witness all of this Black thought on different songs that spoke to people. For me, I'm a tyrant type person. That's what's speaking to me. And Desert Eagle. Maybe I'm not really saved because, especially Tyra's a nasty song. So maybe I haven't, touched the Lord in a while. But also to your point about commentary and thought, Yaya really spoke to me because in that song, she's talking about the history of America. And she said there's a whole lot of red in that white. And yeah, so it's not just the music that she's giving us. She's giving us commentary on culture and history. And that is beautiful to me. Yeah.
Yes. I think what makes her an artist for me is like how she is able to craft her work in a way that invites us to use our imaginations and to bring ourselves in conversation
Yeah.
with it. And like people are constantly looking for her to like elaborate on things and they can't deal with the mystery of some things that she offers us. But like part of the invitation there is like, well, what is it? How is it moving you? And what are you bringing to this to the imagery that she is bringing she and the emotion that she's evoking? And like we really saw that with Renaissance, that like she didn't give us any visuals. There were no accompanying music videos to watch, but like the beehive in its vast and diverse imagination created the visuals, created, and now we see like the same thing happening
Yeah.
harder and folks coming up with dance moves and things like that. Like there is just, there's interesting, and I think this is why like some people have us a hard time naming her as a an artist of our time, like one of the greatest of our times, the greatest. Let's not
Truly.
hold back.
Yeah, let's speak it.
She is the Serena of music in so many ways. And people have a hard time naming that because they have such a hard time believing that a Black woman could offer something that feels like a universe for so many people to like
Yes.
explore. And this brings us back to the world that we know in like imagination and theology. Like so often, like we believe like the most imaginative people are walking the earth are white men. Like people crawl towards their like books and movies and whatever, and it's just like, oh my goodness, look at this epic thing that came out of this white man's imagination. Like, who could ever top this? And it's just like, have you read Octavia Butler?
Truly speak
Have you
on it.
read
Yeah.
N.K. Jemisin? Have you? I mean, like, there are, and it's not to compare and contrast, but to say that also Black people can do this. Also, like this kind of imagination, it exists within us and. Yeah, so I that's what I, yeah,
Yeah, and for me, to your point, it's the world building for me. I'm fascinated by world building because it's given me everything. And whether that's in fantasy, whether that's in music, and in the type of world that people create. And I love that you said universe, because while Beyoncé's work is causing me to be alive in different ways, what I did notice, and even again at the Renaissance tour. I sat in a row with some precious white souls that, when I tell you, they were caught up, transfixed, and they were singing the songs better than I saw sang the songs. And when I tell you, they were yelling at the top of their lungs for 3 hours, I'm like, dang,
that for
okay,
them.
they were clearly older members of the Beehive, because when I tell you, they knew word for word, bar for bar. I think what was beautiful is, like, they were caught up too. They were in their own space and time, and that's beautiful that you could evoke that as a musical artist, and bring that to people. And I also can't help but think of Yeah, I think, she talked about that this album was actually supposed to be Act One originally, and because she had recorded these songs 5 years ago. And I think of the wisdom of an artist to know what to release and when, right? A lot of times as artists, we get this scarcity mentality and we have something burning in us and we think it must be now. But the wisdom to know, no, this is for now, this is for later. And she said, no, the world needed to heal at, because of the pandemic. And so she released songs that evoked, joy and dancing, and that. So that became Act One. And then this project that she had been sitting on, that came out of a negative experience with country fans, and country artists, and her not feeling welcome, she saved for now, which that's wisdom on another level. I haven't sat on my art for 5 years thinking, no, the world isn't ready for this right now. This is, 2029 work.
As someone who does do that very often, I get it. And I get that feeling of like wanting what it is that you're cultivating to like touch the atmosphere at the time it needs to touch the atmosphere. And like I create in multiple mediums, and like writing songs is like one of those mediums. And I can't say that I'm like as prolific as I once was. But there were songs that like I was writing like 10 years ago that I was just like, yeah, no one's ready to hear a song like this from me in this moment. And I don't know. And I don't know if it's still true. And I think like, like has the moment passed? Has it not passed? Is something that I keep thinking about. But yeah, the whole timing thing is interesting. And to juxtapose that with like those who create in a space where like the music for that moment matters, like the bodies in the room matter, like improv. That's another part of, the Black imagination and music that I find so fascinating, because even though that stuff like comes into the archive as something we go back to constantly and think, oh, that was a great moment, but it was actually for a particular time and space and inhabited a world of its own. And now it means something else because we look back at it and we can critique it and we can study it. But I find that fascinating as well.
I love that. I love that. And I feel like that segues into me wanting to ask about some specifics in the music. What songs have been accompanying you? What work has been accompanying you? And before, we get into that, I want to read a quote from Maya Angelou that really speaks to me regarding music. And she said, "Music was my refuge. I could crawl into the space between the notes and curl my back to loneliness." And for me, that is such a beautiful way to encapsulate how I look at music, right? And how music has formed me into the person that I am today. That crawling into the space between the notes. And so, what are some songs, some work that, as a soundtrack to your Black aliveness?
Good question. And I've been thinking about it. And the thing is, like, what I listen to changes like moment to moment. Those who are friends with me on my private IG, which is just for friends.
Okay, you got to
My
get invited.
you can't go. You can't be there. It's a private party. I'll share what I'm listening to, and like the genres, just I don't know. I've always been a fan of like discovery, and like I remember like when I got my first little radio at age like 6 or 7, after I was being babysat by this Jamaican man who owned a radio like stereo store in like Brooklyn, which seems so like stereotypical in so many ways. But
It
yeah.
is giving that, but you know, it's
Yes.
okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, but that was my gift for being an obedient little child for the day. I got a free little radio and I would just like slide between all the different stations. And so for me, I think I still do that. And I prioritize discovery a lot. So I don't really sit with a lot of artists through their like entire catalog or journey. And I don't know that much about the background of their lives or whatever. But to begin,
How
because
about that?
this song literally has my name in it. And it's a song of the moment at right now, you know, online. Can I Call You Rose by
Oh,
these
you've
same
been thinking you live it. All right. You're like, y'all, why is everyone saying my
they
name?
Everyone's saying my name, but they can't commit to giving me the love that the lyrics is talking about. So
I'm dead. I'm dead.
it doesn't
Okay.
don't ask if you could call me Rose if you're not willing to plant me in like a seed so that in your heart so love can grow. That's what the lyrics say.
Oh, my God today. My God on today.
I think there's a something so cool about like the energy of that song and how like it's helping people tap into like this rhythm of like slowness and like ease, pleasure. It has a lightness to it. Like as soon as I play that song on Spotify, like all these like throwback oldies songs will come up, and it's just like the mood of like the whole day just feels like anything is possible. So I love that one. And let's see, I love right now I've been listening to a lot of Gil Scott-Heron. And just like getting in my revolutionary poetry mode. Yeah, part of that's because I've been trying to explore how to read poetry differently and read particular poets and their voices with the rhythm that it needs to be read. So there's that. I love Laura Mvula. We don't talk about her enough for me.
I love that.
Her voice is like, it's not even like, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like a whistle sometimes. Like if a whistle could also be a way of singing, I don't even know. Not like whistle singing like Mariah, but
No, I hear you.
like flute almost. And just like the imagination that she brings to her compositions. And like I want there to be a movie someday that like she writes the whole soundtrack for it. That would just be so cool.
Hey.
I might end with, actually, no, we gotta do two. All right, Eniko, their song Jericho. That song, first of all, everything that they write is about trying to like name themselves as this like otherworldly being that we need to embrace the mystery of in order to enjoy. Like it's constantly just like, you don't know me, you can't define me. I'm not like, I am genderless. I am like vast. I am a universe. I am not from here. Like there's a, I mean, there's like always been a strand within like Black, like self-definition of reaching for otherworldliness to describe ourselves. Because of the containers that have been built for us not fitting us. Like Audre Lorde often goes there, like in trying to name herself as beyond human to like further explain her humanity. And it can get confusing. But I think Eniko has this way of doing that so well. I want to see like, you know, like futuristic films with like their music as like the soundtrack someday. That would be so cool. And lastly, I'm gonna go with Tank and the Bangas. I love Black folk. Black folk, just like just the gentleness of the spoken word throughout that song. Just, it just invites just so many scenes of growing up, Black and alive in the world and being taken care of by our culture. So.
I love that. Oh, you gave us bangers. I come on. I for me. Like music has always been a part of my life. It, as early as I can remember it, music was always playing around me. And I'm a person who I sing a lot. I hum a lot too. You know, a piece that you wrote recently on the hum. And growing, I'm glad we're having this conversation because growing up, I was always such a weird kid compared to the rest of my classmates because, you know, being a child of the 80s, most black boys were listening to hardcore rap. And although I did some too, that there was something in it that didn't speak to me. And that, you know, that made me shy away because I was like, you know, why are we calling them bitches? You know, it's a lot going on in here. You know, and so I was always, I guess I always was soft, right? And as early as I can remember, R&B spoke to me a lot. Jazz really spoke to me. And my earliest memories are Ella Fitzgerald's voice, like filling my home and filling, you know, filling my room. And so the soundtrack to my formation as a boy was Ella Fitzgerald, actually. And then, you know, Miles Davis and Coltrane and others. And so that's kind of how I was formed and why I am the person that I am today, because that space in the music that Ella would create with her voice, when I tell you it was otherworldly, it was beyond human. I'm like, I didn't even understand the content of what she was speaking to. I said, you know, wherever that voice is where I want to be. And so, yeah, so growing up with jazz was a lifeline for me. As a nerdy, I was a really chubby black boy. So jazz gave me a space to be. And then currently, I would say still jazz, but I'll give a couple artists. So spoken word was also really important to me, and the musicality of spoken word. And so people like Floetry really formed me. You know, when I discovered that, I said, oh, this is lit. It's singing and spoken word and singing. Well, wow. So Floetry and just different spoken word artists are so. I cannot do poetry like that, so it invites me into this other place where I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. I would say Samara Joy, for people who know me, if you know, you know, she stays on vinyl in this house. So her album is triple platinum over here. I don't know what it's like where y'all are, but in this house, yeah, it's up. And Diggable Planets stays on in this home as well. And I don't know, there's something about the work that Diggable Planets did that was just revolutionary to me at the time. And it's there's a rhythm to their work that allows me to think about the work they're saying. I'm blanking on their names. But the woman in the group, her flows just take me to a place where I'm like, no, that's a philosopher. I don't know what I don't know what this work that she's doing, but these aren't just catchy rhymes. She's taking me somewhere. And yeah, the other person, two people I'll say, is Willow. Willow has music that is so eclectic. That you have to be a fan of the world that she's building. And in that world, it is all the colors of the wind is in the room. And I love her work, especially Meet Me at a Spot, you know. You know, yeah. I catch a vibe, me 24/7. I'll just be yelling in the middle of nowhere, like I got or with my hair back and forth. It depends on the day, the lunar cycle. So Willow, I love her work. And then Megan Thee Stallion. I think I People would be surprised if they don't know me. If they do know me, they know my Spotify every year. My Spotify artist is my top person is Meg Thee Stallion. And the song that I get as my number one song every year is Freak Nasty. So whatever that reveals about me, that is who I am to my Black aliveness. Yes.
Listen, this is a no judgment zone. And I think there's a need for us to constantly affirm that the sounds of Black aliveness are whatever sounds help all Black people come alive, regardless of like where they find it, what genre, what the artist looks like. And yeah, so I second what you mentioned about Willow in the worlds that she's building. And I think for me, it like it speaks to me as someone who grew up listening to like where I really fell in love with music, like it was in rock music. And
Wow, yeah.
that's because early 2000s hip hop wasn't all that. Like there wasn't a lot going on besides Outkast and like a few
Yeah, for
other.
sure. I get it.
Most of the music was just, I mean, we had Chingy. Let's not even
Okay, now wait. Don't do this, friend. Do not.
Listen, I love me some Chingy, okay? But I'm like
Okay.
not trying to go too deep into it. But like in terms of like there were these like really like anyways, there just wasn't a lot for me going on in hip hop at the
No, I
time.
get it.
But I loved and I also I think part of that was because there weren't a range of emotions. There were a range of emotions that just weren't present in pop music
No, I get that.
genre at the time. So like for someone who had like a lot of rage and who was like depressed a lot, like rock music spoke to me. And there weren't a lot of people like me in that in the genre. And as someone who spent a lot of time at the library as well, I read a lot of biographies and music history. So I knew that I knew the origins of rock music came from Black people. And you know, I read Jimi Hendrix's a biography on him. I read it whatever I could to make me feel like yes, I can find a home in this, even though the people around me just were not with it. And then here comes Willow. Here comes the band Meet Me at the Altar, coming from
Yeah.
signed by the same label as Paramore, like led by a Haitian woman as this lead singer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're like these like younger Black women are making the music I wish I could have made around, you know, age like 15, 16, 17. And that just feels so freeing to me. And more people need to know that like they can find themselves in like the diversity of music that is out there.
I needed music that helped me get like my pain out and in my tears out. I thought, you know, people wonder about me now and the man I am now because I'll cry because it's a normal Tuesday. I'll cry. I cry for any reason, anytime. And as a child, I remember listening to so much jazz and R&B, and I would just be crying in my room for hours. And I think I didn't have that outlet anywhere else, and music gave me that space. And I didn't know at the time what it was, but I could be listening to, I think a You're My Little Secret by Escape. Terrible song as far as content. It's talking about, you know, you trying to find a way to cheat with you with your side boo. And I used to just listen to that and cry. There was something, there was an affect that was happening where it was like the musicality opened up the space where I would be thinking about the pain of my life. I would be thinking about like my dreams that I never could get to. You know, I never would have imagined that I could be where I am right now. And R&B allowed me to feel those feels. So I don't know. I mean, it's to the point now. I mean, you can see me walking down the street listening to Usher's Confessions. I'll just be crying. Yes, I nothing in this is my actual life, but I don't know. Music gave me that space. So in case you see me walking and you think, oh, he's probably listening to worship
Nah.
music, and that's why he's crying. Nah, it's probably something random.
Yes, to speak to the idea of music, like opening up a place for these feelings that you may not have the ability to express otherwise, or the room or capacity in your life. Like a couple months ago, I just like posted a selfie of me wearing this Nirvana shirt that I've got on right now, and the caption was like, "For colored girls who grew up listening to Nirvana, because it was the safest way to express eldest daughter rage."
Yes.
That's like got so many like responses. People like that were just like, "Oh my gosh, this was me. This explains everything. Like, wow, like
Wow.
this is the thing." And so, like, I've just been like trying to like embody that energy and like some of the ways that I've been putting out my own music lately. I've been a lot more bold about, sharing like, yeah, this is what I listen to and this is what I love singing. So what? And that really just comes from feeling like, okay, like this experience isn't unique to me. There are others who love that, who are there, who have been there. So I just love that in so many ways, to bring in like what's possible on the internet. Like there's a way that you can find your people in community,
Yes.
what you listen to, and just be like, yeah, there are people who get this. I'm thinking of like TikTok and how I haven't been on there. I try to go on TikTok like once a month. Gotta like moderate my exposure to TikTok because
It's a
one,
lot.
I'm a highly sensitive person. So like the intensity of TikTok is too much for me. But yes, this whole world's on there. And I love the world of like Black millennials claiming that title of like elder emo, Black elder emo, and just sitting with like their experiences, just being like, yeah, I grew up listening to this music, and now I've got this Black consciousness, but I still listen to this man. This is still me. I'm still rocking out.
Black Coffee and Theology Pod is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. Follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. If you like the content that you are receiving here and want to receive more, whether that is in longer conversations, essays, devotions, and videos from either myself, Sam, or Trey, please sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Don't forget to like, rate, and review Black Coffee and Theology Pod, as well as Three Black Men.